pin Champaka, so she's on. I can't hear you. Are you talking to me? No. Okay. So, all right, so, and put my video on. It's better you see her dancing than me singing. She manifests, let's say, a servant of Srimati Radharani, whereas I may manifest a servant of Durga. So anyway. All right, so we're going to chant Jai Radha Madhava. I think we're ready to go. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari, Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varu Dhauti, Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varu Dhauti, Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Vardhaudi, Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Vardhaudi, Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvatikacharya Also Tada Sitashi Shimad His Divine Grace Avaya Chatanada Bhaktivedanta Gosami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrindi Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Ram Sai Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Parabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindikajai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopikopata Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shivadi Dalasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindigajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. Vaom Vishnupadaya Krishna Pristaya Budle Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharini Nivashesha Srinivari Paschacha Dejatari Om Magana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chaksurim Miritam Jeta Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So now we are going to continue with our Bhagavad Gita study. We are on the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Let's see, there it is. And we are up to text 6. Okay, I think I want to review a few things, because some devotees asked me questions about yesterday's class, especially about the first, second, and third class devotees. So this is not meant, or these categories are not meant as pejoratives. In other words, we're not trying to criticize anyone. You are only third class. You are only second class. And I am first class. That's not the point. The point is we should be able to identify what platform we're at, not to use these designations to point out the faults in others. And understanding our deficiencies or our challenges and opportunities, we can make more progress in Krishna consciousness. So here are the three categories, and I'm going to try to be as complete as possible. So the first, or let's say the first category, is the third class devotee. Okay. That's called Kanishta Adhikari. It's Kanishta, it means materialistic devotee. Why materialistic? Because they see God, Krishna, in the temple, and basically they don't see Him elsewhere. I gave the example to a devotee earlier today about a movie during, I guess it was the 1960s or something like that, or whatever. And it was called Never on Sunday. It was about a lady who basically was a member of one of the world's oldest occupations. I mean, she was a prostitute. And she was very religious. So on Sunday, she really went to church, pious, you know, first class. Well, not first class. Third class. So it was like that. And Prabhupada had a term for that. He called that churchianity. Now, that doesn't only refer to members of a particular religion, let's say the Catholic religion or a Christian religion, but it refers to members of every single type of faith who go to the church, the mosque, the temple, to try to connect to God, but outside there they feel God's not looking or it's not that important. You know, their version of being religious is they're religious in the temple, or they are religious one day of the week. Just like you have in the Ten Commandments, the Sabbath day. One should remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Okay, so that's God's day. So the reason for that particular injunction in the Old Testament is that people were pretty crazy, so at least one day a week they should give to God. Okay? One day a week. Whereas someone on a higher platform of devotional service or higher platform of godliness will be thinking every day of the week belongs to God. As Krishna says in the Ishvapanishad, you know, that Ishvashavidam Sarvam, Yatkinta Jagajam Jagat. Everything is owned and controlled by Krishna. Everything is meant to be utilized to serve Krishna. Like that verse we read yesterday, the real renunciation means to use everything in Krishna's service. So that's why you have to have one day a week in certain religions, because that's God's day. It's interesting. So that describes a Kanishta Adhikari. One day a week, one place, God's there. Everything else is not that important, even if God says, thou shalt not kill. I was listening to a discussion Prabhupada was having with one Christian, and the Christian was saying, killing, well, we don't murder. And Prabhupada said, no, the word is killing. Jesus used the word, and Prabhupada's referring to Jesus, but actually it's in the Old Testament. Killing. So, killing any type of living entity. So, and then the question was raised by this person. This person was quite intelligent. Aren't we killing vegetables? And the point is, because we're offering them to Krishna, we're not really killing them or committing violence. Let's see, committing violence, because by being offered to Krishna, that particular broccoli is going to make his way up the evolutionary hierarchy and eventually become a human being. So that's allowed. It's not killing at that particular point. For example, the example Prabhupada gave was quite interesting. He said, if you're on the battlefield and you're fighting, hopefully, a religious war, but and the governor or government tells you, shoot, then you're not really considered to be liable for murder. It's considered that you were carrying out the orders. Of course, it's not that you should carry out any damn order you get from the government. That's not the point. But if you're fighting to protect someone, let's say someone comes here to the temple and they're attacking someone and I have to just like take matters in my own hands and tell this devotee Sri Arjuna, take him out and to protect the devotees, then that's not really killing at that point because it's permitted. So in the same way, we are permitted, patram pushpam palam puyam yamai bhakta prayachati. We are permitted to eat vegetables. There's certain food that's allotted for us. You know, fruits, vegetables, grains, milk products. If the cows are properly protected, yes. That's the caveat right there. So they're allowed for us. So anyway, so the point is, yeah, so-called religious people, they try to compartmentalize God. Or they may have their confession, which Prabhupada talked about. You know, they confess once a week, and they think they become free from all the reactions to all their nefarious activities. And it doesn't work like that. They don't become free from the reactions to the nefarious activities. So that is called a third-class devotee. Okay? And a third-class devotee doesn't understand philosophy too well. You know, just like, well, he's a devotee, but he has some devotion. It's a beginning stage. It's better than nothing. Okay, and a second-class devotee understands the philosophy, has complete faith. Third class, actually, Prabhupada said yesterday in our reading in the purport, third class can fall down because he's not really understanding the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It's just very sentimental. And sentiment can change depending upon who we associate with or what we think about. We can even associate with things in our mind. So we can fall down from that. So the second class devotee, he has firm faith. Yes, Krishna is God. We're not the body. He knows the basic philosophy. He's really not able to defeat someone else in terms of philosophically defeat. We're not talking about fighting with one's fists. But he's not able to philosophically defeat or convince people too well. But he has firm faith and he has love in his heart for Krishna. And he will go out and preach. How will he preach? He'll ask people to chant Krishna's holy name, and he'll distribute Srila Prabhupada's books and refer others to people who are more advanced in devotional service. So he discriminates between who is envious, and those people he avoids, and those who are favorable or innocent. He tries to help. He doesn't waste time on people who are just not ready for it. So that's really important. Of course, that's one of the offenses on chanting, that one wastes his time and instructs the faithless about the glories of chanting Hare Krishna. And then he worships Krishna and Radharani, or Radha and Krishna, worships Radharani first. And then also he makes friends with other devotees. So this is actually a second-class devotee. This is what we should aspire for. And a first-class devotee is called a paramahansa. That means topmost swan-like person. Why do we say swan? Because a swan is able to take nectar even from a filthy place. So he's completely Krishna conscious. He's paramahansa. And Prabhupada said that he's always thinking on how to bring people to Krishna consciousness. And in order to do that, he has to act on the second class. Because if one simply acts on the first class devotee, he just sees everyone is serving Krishna, and he's so humble, as Lord Chaitanya says, manina trinadavi sunechena, purari vasihishana, manina manadena kirtanya sadavi, more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and he's ready to offer all respects to others. So if he just remains completely tolerant like that and doesn't show, let's say, anger at the appropriate moment, he's not able to preach like that. Just like I was listening to, it was very interesting. Prabhupada was, it was a memory. Prabhupada was talking to someone who came to the temple in India, and this person was a member of the Ramakrishna Vivekananda Society. And he went to see Prabhupada, and basically he started to talk about Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, and Prabhupada said, my disciples won't even go to pass urine in the centers of Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. And why did Prabhupada say that? Because Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, they had no idea about any restrictions, the goal of human life. It was all like hodgepodge, and even they were known as the meat-eating center in India. In other words, they all ate meat, particularly chickens. In Hindi, the word for meat is murghi. So one time, another story about them, is one time the devotees were at the Kumbh Mela, and they saw some chickens walking around, and the other sadhus from the other group said, you better save those chickens for the followers of Ramakrishna. I mean, obviously, someone who's spiritual is not going to eat chickens. Anyway, so getting back to the point. So a first-class devotee, what's called Paramahamsa Uttama Adhikari, Uttama means topmost, is not going to really be going out and preaching because he's absorbed, so absorbed in his internal relationship with Krishna that he's basically oblivious to this world. Oblivious to this world. But the first class devotee like Prabhupada steps down to be able to preach out of compassion. In other words, he puts aside his own ecstasies. This is a really important point. He puts aside his own ecstasies in order to help others. One example of someone putting aside his own ecstasies to serve Krishna is Duruka, Krishna's servant, who was serving Krishna by fanning him. And he was feeling so much ecstasy, but he just kept his ecstasy down so it wouldn't interfere with his service to Krishna. Now that's a real devotee. That's a topmost devotee. And Prabhupada really just put aside his own happiness for the happiness of us. Put aside his own happiness. And that's really a devotee. Like Vasudeva Dutt, willing to suffer for others. Or Lord Jesus Christ, willing to suffer for those who are his followers. So that's what it means when a first-class devotee steps down to the second class. He doesn't become second class, but he acts in that particular way to help others, because Prabhupada certainly discriminated between those who are favorable, those who are unfavorable, and he worshipped God, and he made friends with the devotees. So we find that, there's first class acting as second class. So those are the three classes. The third class, Kanishtadikar, materialistic. Second class is Majjhimadikar. Majjhim means middle. And that person interacts differently with the devotees, with the innocent, with the envious, and with the Supreme Personality. And then the first class, topmost devotee, completely Krishna conscious, seeing Krishna everywhere, Prinanjana, Charita, Bhakti, Vilochana, Hena, Chandakshadaiva, Vidyeshu, Vilokiyanti, Yam, Shaima, Shundam, Chinchaguna, Svarupam, Govindam, Adipurasham, Tamaham, Bajamdi. So those are the questions I was asked today. So let's continue with the Bhagavad Gita. It was important to answer those questions. This is more philosophy, like a Chinchabeda Veda Tattva philosophy in this verse. So, yata kashastato nityam vayu sarvachago mahan tatastaravani bhutani matstani chupadarya. Yata, just as akashastitaha, situated in the sky, nityam, always. Vayu, the wind, sarvacha gaha, blowing everywhere, mahan, great, tata, similarly, sarvani bhutani, all created beings, matstani, situated in me, iti, thus, upadariya, try to understand. Translation, understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere, rest always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. So that's actually referring to something in Krishna's material elements that is referred to as ether. Now, ether is not something they give you in the hospital to put you out. Ether is an ethereal substance, but it's one of the grosser elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, because it indicates space. I remember when I was going to the university, the scientists were trying to disprove the existence of ether, which is pretty stupid, by, I think they were using like laser beams at right angles that were supposed to be moving through the ether. But the point is, the ether is simply space. Space. Empty space. So even if you take a bell jar and you suck all the air out of a bell jar, it looks like a bell. And that's what they use to make a vacuum. They have a vacuum pump, pumps all the air out. Even if you take all the air out, this is theoretically, if you could take everything out, you'd still have space. You understand? Space is ether. Okay, got it. Even in outer space, where there's supposedly very little, it's outer space. There's space. There's a distance between us and the stars. That's ether. So everything rests in space. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Everything rests in space. I mean, my hand is in space. My head is in space. Everything is in space in this world. So in the same way, everything rests in Krishna. In other words, Krishna's external energy, is the internal energy, external energy. Everything is Krishna's energy. Remember I talked about yesterday how he winds it up at the end of the creation like a spider. He winds up the spider web and then he lets it out. So everything, just like everything, rests in the spider web. Well, not really. Every little bug that's caught rests in the spider web. But in one sense, the spider web is the spider. In one sense, it's not. Same thing with Krishna. That's really easy to understand. All created beings rest in him. For the ordinary person, it is almost inconceivable how the huge material creation is resting in him. But the Lord is giving an example which may help us to understand. The sky may be the biggest manifestation we can conceive. And in the sky, the wind or air is the biggest manifestation of the cosmic world. The movement of the air influences the movements of everything. Now here, Prabhupada is also referring to the subtle airs. There's subtle airs in the body, not just the airs we see, but this can also be attributed to energies. It's like there's energies everywhere. So when we talk about air, It's a lot more than just the oxygen and nitrogen that we're breathing. But although the wind is great, it's still situated within the sky. The wind is not beyond the sky. Everything's in the sky. Everything's in the... Everything is in space. Simply, all wonderful cosmic manifestations are existing by the supreme will of God, and all of them are subordinate to that supreme will. As we generally say, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the supreme personality of Godhead. Thus, everything is moving under his will. By his will, everything is being created, everything is being maintained, and everything is being annihilated. Still, he is aloof from everything, as the sky is always aloof from the activities of the wind. That's true. The space never changes. Things can happen in the space, but it never changes. That's obvious. I can move in space, but I'm not changing the space. Let's see, if I move from here to, let's say, 100 meters away, 100 meters away is still the 100 meters away, whether I move or not move. In the Upanishads, it is said, Yad Visha Vata Mpavake, it is out of fear of the Supreme Lord that the wind is blowing. That Taittiriya Upanishad 2.8.1. In the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 3.8.9, it is stated, Etashiva Aksharasya Prashane Gargi Surya Chandramaso Vittau Tishtata Etashiva Aksharasya Prashane Gargi Vava Priti Vau Nidritau. By the supreme order, under the superintendence of the supreme personality of God, the moon, the sun, and the other great planets are moving. In the Brahma Sanghita, in the 5th chapter, text 52, also it is stated, Yat chakshuresha savita sakala grahanam raja samasta sura murti rasesha teja. Whoops, something got... Yasha Geha Pramati Samrita Kala Chakro Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. This is a description of the movement of the sun. It is said that the sun is considered to be one of the eyes of the Supreme Lord, and that it has immense potency to diffuse heat and light. Still, it is moving in its prescribed orbit by the order and supreme will of Govinda. So from the Vedic literature, we can find evidence that this material manifestation, which appears to us to be very wonderful and great, is under the complete control of the supreme personality of Godhead. This will be further explained in the later verses of this chapter. Okay, pretty self-explanatory. All right, next verse. Sarvabhutani kunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kapakshaye punastani kapado vishajamyaham. So sarvabhutani, all created entities, kunteya, son of Kunti, prakritim, nature, yanti, enter, mamikam, my, kapakshaye, at the end of the millennium, punaha, again, tani, all those, kapa adao, in the beginning of the millennium, Rishajami, create Aham I. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature, and at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. And we discussed this before, that there is an incarnation or expansion of Krishna called the Mahavishnu, that means a great Vishnu. And he is lying down, and at a particular juncture, he's breathing out. And as he breathes out, all the universes come out from his body in seed-like form, and they expand, expanding universes, which is what the scientists talk about. And they expand and expand and expand and become manifest. And of course, they manifest in different ways. He enters into each one as the Garbhodakshay Vishnu and then the Shiradakshay Vishnu, but that's another subject matter. So they enter... at the end of the millennium, the end of the creation, he breathes in, and all the living entities come back. and everything becomes shrunk up. Boom! And that's called the pradana. The material energy in the unmanifest state is called the pradana. And then in the beginning, another one happens again. Back and forth, back and forth. The creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this material cosmic manifestation are completely dependent on the supreme will of the personality of Godhead. At the end of the millennium means that the death of Brahma, we talked about that before. Brahma lives for 100 years, and his day is calculated as 4,300,000,000 of our earthly years. His night is of the same duration. I guess the rest is a long time, pretty good. His month consists of 30 such days and nights, and his year of 12 months. After 100 such years, when Brahma dies, the devastation or annihilation takes place. This means that the energy manifested by the Supreme Lord is again wound up in himself. Then again, when there is need to manifest the cosmic world, it is done by his will, Bhang Shang. Although I am one, I shall become many. This is the Vedic aphorism from the Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3. He expands himself in this material energy, and this whole cosmic manifestation again takes place. So, anyway, I think I need to explain something here. Okay. Remember, just to reiterate what we've spoken about before, we're talking about 4,300,000 of earthly years. That is 1,000 Divya Yugas. What do I mean by Divya Yugas? That means the cycle of the four Yugas. In other words, you have Satya Yuga, the good Yuga. Then, Treta Yuga, as things start to go down. Dwarpa Yuga, things go down even more. And then Kali Yuga, it's a mess. And they have terrible presidents of the United States in Kali Yuga. Anyway, so, I know I have to mention that every class. So, the four yugas are there. Got it? So each yuga is four, each Divya Yuga is 4,300,000 years. And 1,000 times that is 4,300,000 years. So in other words, 1,000 of those cycles go by for Brahma's day, and 1,000 of those cycles go by for his night. So long. So that's what I wanted to explain. Sahasra Yuga Paryantam. 1,000 ages. Sahasra means 1,000. So, next verse. Prakritim Swam Avastavya Vishrajami Puna Puna Uttagrama Mimam Gritsnam Avasham Prakritir Vashat. Prakritim, the material nature, Swam of my personal self. Avastavya, entering into Vishrajami, I create Puna Puna again and again. Uttagrama and all the cosmic manifestations, Imam, this, these. Kritsnam in total, Avasham automatically prakatehe of the force of nature, Vashat, under obligation. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. This will is called Icha Shakti. Icha Shakti means the potency of the desire of God. In other words, God doesn't have to do anything. Krishna doesn't have to do anything. It's just by his willing it. And as we hear in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is apta kama. Apta kama means he wants something and it happens. Something like that old story we're familiar with where Aladdin, he rubs the lamp and the genie comes out and says, "Your wish is my command, sire." Of course, Aladdin got in trouble from the genie, or with the genie. But that's a different story. So it's something like that. Krishna just like, thanks, oh, nice to have that. Okay, it's there. And in the spiritual world, because we are pure devotees in the spiritual world, otherwise we wouldn't be there, you have desire trees, desire cows, desire everything. So if you did, like probably would say sometimes, if you want some particular fruit from a tree, it'll be there. Even when Lord Chaitanya was present 500 years ago, he was with his devotees one time, and devotees wanted mangoes, so he planted a seed, the mango tree came out, and there were mangoes that came out of the tree, and these mangoes had no pits, no skins. In other words, you could eat them. I guess like now you have things with a little skin that you can eat, like a pear or something like that. Sometimes people skin apples, but usually don't skin pears. You usually eat the skin of the pears. So it was like that, because that was a desire tree. And the cows, they can produce any quantity of milk, any substance that you like. You can have, what would you like, ice cream, yogurt, anything coming from the cow. In fact, there is some interesting stories about even desire cows in this world. Like Vasishtha Muni, he had this cow named Nandini. And Nandini could even produce soldiers to protect him from the onslaught of someone who was attacking him, which was Viswamitra Muni. So anyway, so what to speak of Krishna? He just wants something, thinks about it, and it happens. Doesn't have to ask anybody. It's pretty cool. That is the richest guy, most powerful guy, that's Krishna. The only time, actually, let's talk about this a little bit. The only time things don't happen the way he wants is when his devotees, his pure devotees like Radharani, have some other idea. They're the only ones who can interfere with Krishna's will, not because they are ontologically more powerful than him, in other words, not by nature more powerful, because of their bhakti. I'll give you an example. Once upon a time, you're all familiar with the story of Jagai and Madai. Jagai and Madai had attacked Lord Nityananda. Of course, Lord Nityananda is the same as Balaram, we understand that. And Lord Chaitanya was getting ready to kill them because they had attacked him. And he took out his Sudarshan Chakra disc. But Lord Nityananda, acting as the great devotee, he was able to save these two personalities. Not only save them, but they became pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and part of Lord Chaitanya's entourage. So that's the point. If we connect with Krishna's pure devotee, then we got it made. Yeah, we got it made. Of course, connecting doesn't mean some sentiment. You just take the foot dust and just do any damn thing you want. That's not what connecting means. Connecting means to be absorbed. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Kodiyakya. So what does that mean? Be absorbed in the words coming from the mouth of the spiritual master and dedicating your life to those words. Then you're connected. That's what connection means. How do you connect with someone? Just being with them? You don't connect with them. You connect by vibrating at the same frequency as them. I know I'm using an example in the material world. Sympathetic vibration. It's really interesting. Just like sometimes someone who is singing very loudly, they can connect with the inherent vibratory frequency of a glass or a window and break the glass. So we're supposed to connect by being at the same frequency as Krishna's pure devotee. So Prabhupada, Vijay. So if we serve Prabhupada, and Prabhupada becomes pleased with us, Nagati Katope, Yasha Prasada, Bhagavat Prasado, Yasha Prasada, Nagati Katope, then we got it made, but we have to please Prabhupada. Not just say, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I love Prabhupada, but you have to please Prabhupada, and then you got it made. That's all you got to do. You don't have to impress anybody by your austerities. You don't have to eat very little, sleep on a bed of nails. You don't have to be a big whatever. Just please Prabhupada and Krishna will take you. Yeah. Even if Krishna didn't want to, even if Krishna's thinking, who's that rascal? I don't want to take him. But Prabhupada says, you got to accept that rascal. That's it. Krishna says, yes, sir. It's of love. By love you can control. Even the greatest person is Krishna. So the material world is a manifestation of the inferior energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This has already been explained several times. At the creation, the material energy is let loose as the Mahatattva. That means the great identity. In other words, material energy is first appears in a unmanifest stage like clay. We described that in a previous class. And the Lord enters, the first Purusha incarnation, Mahavishnu, enters this dark corner of the material universe, which is in a dormant state, and he lies in the causal ocean. That's interesting, causal ocean. Why is it called causal ocean? Because everything in this material world is based on cause and effect. You don't have an effect without a cause. It's obvious. That's why people get bewildered when they try to think about how is the universe, how did it begin? Scientists say, you know, all of a sudden there was a boom. Not a boom. You know, anyway, explosion or whatever they call it. All of a sudden it was that, but what was there before? What caused it? And there's something that is causeless before the original cause in the material world. But Krishna is the cause of all causes, so nothing caused him. You know, so people can go back. Who is your father? My father was also. Who is his father? Oh, my father was also. So back. And finally you get to the original father, who is Krishna. And he didn't have a father. Because he exists in the eternal realm. In eternity, you don't have this law of cause and effect. Everything is. It just is. Just like even in the Bible, you know, God is introducing himself as I am that I am. I just is. I mean, obviously he doesn't use bad English like that, like you do in the South of the United States. But it just is. There's no past, present, or future in this spiritual realm. Although things, there are activities and everything like that, but it's not under the jurisdiction of the material energy. So there's no, the causes are not there. It's just not there. It's hard to conceive. It's inconceivable. Nothing created God. You know, people always ask, so who created God? And then you have to go, who created that thing that created God? And who created the thing that created the thing that created God? Infinite regress. But it stops, the buck stops at Krishna. So, breathes out innumerable universes, and to each universe the Lord again enters as the Garbha Daksha. Krishna Garbha means like a womb. So the womb of the universe. Krishna expands himself again. Each universe is multi-universes, multiverses, as the scientists say. Each universe is in that way created. He still further manifests himself as the Kshira Dakshayi Vishnu, and that Vishnu enters into everything, even to the minute atom. This is a fact explained here. This fact is explained here. He enters into everything. Now, as far as the living entities are concerned, that's us, they're impregnated into this material nature, and as a result of their past deeds, they take different positions. How are they impregnated? Before the creation, we're within the body of the Mahavishnu, and he looks out. I mentioned this several times before in our previous classes. He looks out, and he impregnates with his eyes. Now, it's described in the Brahma Sangita, Anganiya Sha Shakalen Driya Dri Timanti, that the Lord can do anything with any part of his body. He can impregnate with his eyes. And his eyes, that glance, is called Shambhu or Shiva. And Shiva relates or consorts with the material energy. Thus, the activities of the material world begin. The activities of the different species of living beings are begun from the very moment of creation. It is not that all is evolved. The different species of life are created immediately along with the universe. Of course, there may not be all the species in every planet. So at certain times, there will only be a certain species and a certain planet. But there's almost infinite planets in each universe. Men, animals, beasts, birds, everything is simultaneously created because whatever desires the living entities have at the last annihilation are again manifested. So let me explain that. When the whole material creation is unmanifest, in other words, annihilated, all the souls leave their bodies. But they have some desires. You know, they leave their bodies, but there's some desires, and those desires are actually part of the soul. So again, when they're given a body, Krishna reminds them of their past desires as the super soul. And so they get a body that's appropriate to their past desires, even though there is such a long period of time. Remember, we talked about 1,000 ages taken together as Lord Brahma's day, and then he has 365 days a year and 100 years of his lifetime. It's incalculable. How about that? Anyway, the whole lifetime. And that's how much time we are unmanifest, or sleeping, or dormant, or suspended animation. Any of those terms you want to use is appropriate. So, anyway, so you come out again, and let's give an example. When you go to sleep, okay, you had so many desires. And when you're sleeping, you may forget about all those desires. You may go through a whole bunch of new desires when you sleep. You may dream of your past life. You may dream of a gold mountain because you had a mountain before and you had gold before. You may dream that you were a bird flying in the air. And if you're a psychologist, you'll analyze, what does that mean, according to Sigmund Freud. So anyway, you'll dream so many things, and then when you wake up, you sort of remember, hey, I had that desire. I mean, just like right now, you know, we have a desire to do some construction here at the temple, and we're building some more facility for our guests. And when I go to sleep, I don't really remember. I don't dream about construction at night, thank God. But when I wake up and I think about it, oh, it's happening. It's like that. So it's the same thing. As soon as you're placed in the material energy, your desires are remembered. Oh, I'm supposed to be a dog. It is clearly indicated here by the word avasham that the living entities have nothing to do with this process. The state of being in their past life, the past creation, is simply manifested again. And this, all this is done simply by his will. And that's also a reason why you shouldn't commit suicide, because you commit suicide, you're just left with the same thing. Of course, first you've got to become a ghost, which is really, just doesn't make it. You know, it's not a pleasant experience. But after that, you know, whatever problems you had, you can't get away. You take your problems with you. You take your karma with you. Even if you have bad karma in this lifetime and you go to another country, thinking, oh, it's really bad here. We got a bad leader. You go to another country, whatever suffering or enjoyment you're meant to have, you will have it. You take your mind with you. This is the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of God, and after creating different species of life, he has no connection with them. The creation takes place to accommodate the inclinations of various living entities, and so the Lord does not become involved with it. In other words, some people, they want to blame Krishna for the creation. They said, why did Krishna create such a horrible place? And Prabhupada said, Krishna did not create it. I mean, he did, of course. But you created it. It's like the prisoner is the one who's responsible. Ultimately, he's the why factor for the prison house. The government is only the agent that deals with the prisoner's nefarious activities. So this is an important point to understand. So he accommodates the inclinations of various living entities. So you're being accommodated now, right now, with your various nefarious inclinations. So this is an important verse, and I think we will take this up tomorrow and try to end a little earlier tonight, but we'll take questions now. So let's take you all off of mute. One second. So now you are officially allowed to unmute yourselves. So who has a question?
I have a question, Gurudev.
Lindsay, I turned my volume up so I can hear you better. The better to hear you with. Who is that?
It's Gopal Gurudev.
Oh, Gopal Gurudev. Gurudev Gopal.
So in India, there are so many gotras of Aryans who have come from Brighamuni or other sons or grandsons of Lord Brahma. But from the Bhagavatam, we understand that those of us who are of European descent or other descent that's not from the gotras are descendants of those soldiers that were created by the Kamadhenu, the desire cow of Vasishtha Muni. Is that correct?
Speak for yourself. I'm from the Yadu dynasty.
Oh.
No. Anyway, we were probably driven out of, this would be more specific, driven out of Europe by Parashuram. He was killing all the Shishtas.
Right.
That's probably said the European stock is like that. So.
And then.
So what's
wasn't
the problem?
Wasn't it that those Kshatriyas that were driven out by Parashuram were the descendants of the soldiers that were created by Vasishtha Muni?
Not necessarily all of them. I didn't read that all of them were like that. There were Mlechas and Yavanas and other things like that. But we're probably that generally the Europeans were like Kshatriya stock. And I don't know if all of them were like coming from Kamadhenu or whatever. But I know that Europeans were Kshatriya stock. But anyway, it doesn't matter. We're all, Prabhupada said, we're all mixed castes of unknown origin. That was Prabhupada's statement. And I don't know. Oh, yeah, there was an interesting memory I was listening to today. My godbrother Yashimati Nandana was telling this story. It's very interesting. And he was saying that before the opening of the Krishna Balaram Mandir, he was asked by Prabhupada to go and talk to various sadhus in Vrindavan and invite them to come to the opening of the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And some of the very prominent sadhus refused to come because they said, he's giving Brahmin threads to Westerners, non-Indians. And then, even when Yashomati Nandan Prabhu was told by Prabhupada to recite certain verses from the Bhagavatam, the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, that showed that someone should be understood according to their qualities. And of course, the Gita, we also have that verse, Chaturvarnamaya Mayashrishtam Gunakarma Vibhagasha. They said, oh, your spiritual masters trained you up very nicely. He said, but they may have the qualities, but they should not be given the label. So there is so much discrimination against the Western devotees. And some of them even said, if you do your service nicely, you can take birth in India as a Brahmin family in next life. And Prabhupada said, you can tell them that if they do their service nicely, they can take birth in the West of the Hare Krishna movement in the next life. So anyway, whatever body we have, oh, the body is a symbol of shame. It's just like that story that we learned when we were young, the Scarlet Letter. I don't know if you remember that story. There was one lady who was also a member of the world's oldest profession, and she had to wear like this big A on her shirt that depicted her as an adulteress. And so the point I'm making is that we're wearing this material body, and that is our scarlet letter. Even if we're from India or we're from wherever, unless we're like an Nityasiddha devotee and we're taking this body. But this body is a manifestation of our previous sinful activities. So whatever our roots are, and if you like, we can arrange for you to have a little swab taken and we can send it to the genetic people. It's not that expensive anymore, Gopal. I can arrange, if you really want, I'll give it to you as a birthday present. Then we could just send it in and find out where your ancestors come from.
No, thank you, Gurudev.
So, anyway, it really doesn't matter. I mean, look at Valmiki, look at Haridas Thakur, look at Magrari the Hunter, Dinahina Yatu Chilo Haridam Budurilo. If we get Prabhupada's mercy, which is Lord Chaitanya's mercy, none different, then whatever, whether I came, whether Parsaram chased out my great-great-great-grandfather from Europe, or from India, or whether I came from Vishishtamuni's cow's udder, you know, whatever. My genes are not actually auspicious. I have bad genes. But by Prabhupada's mercy, here I am. You know, people should not be proud of their birth. I was born in the USA. All right, don't worry, be happy. Chant Hare Krishna, and whatever Krishna has given you, you know, whatever hand cards Krishna's giving you, it's a good hand. It's like when you're playing cards, you're just like, don't show anyone your deck. All right, who else has a question? Anybody else?
I have a question, Gurudev.
Oh, Sita. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Good to see you.
Yes, same here. Gurudev, so you mentioned about Shiro Dakshai Vishnu.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that means that we have...
Your internet connection is actually not doing too well. Could anybody else make out what he was asking? I think her internet connection went down.
Maybe she should just type it on chat. Maybe she should type a question.
I think she was asking, that means we have Shira Dakshay Vishnu in our heart. Instead of like intuit. Yes, we have Shira Dakshay Vishnu in our hearts. In our heart. Somehow other internet connection went out at the same time. Sometimes that happens. The super soul. Who else has a question? It's good. She's in Australia, Brisbane, Australia. Very nice disciple and very devoted.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances and all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Okay, you got one question. That's it.
Yes, Maharaj. Just one question. Okay. While the other devotees were asking this question, I was getting one question like, why all the incarnations of the Lord, again and again, they came in India? Was that because Delhi was considered to be a place from where the world was being ruled?
Yeah, I mean, India, of course, yeah, originally the whole world was ruled from India. India is called Punya Bhumi. It's a pious place. All the rivers practically are holy rivers in India. I mean, it's a very holy place. It's like the church of the whole world or the temple of the whole world. So Krishna decided. Although there have been incarnations who came to other places. Lord Ram came to Brazil. Did you know that?
No, Maharaj. I thought he was from Ayodhya, right?
Yeah, from Ayodhya, but he went to Brazil. There's this whole story of Ahiravana. Do you know that story? Mahiravana, Ahiravana.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Ahiravana built a tunnel between Lanka and Brazil. And Lord Ramchandra was taken to Brazil by Ahiravana. And then Hanuman went there to save Ram and Lakshman. And how do I know that? Because Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said there was a tunnel between Lanka and Brazil. And he also said that's where Ravan got a lot of the gold from. From Brazil. So those of you who are from Brazil should be very proud. But we also have Prabhupada, who is a Shaktivesha avatar, came to America. But yes, it's true. Krishna's pastimes occurred in India. That is true.
And Lord Rama, and then even the Maya Devi Durga, everybody, whomever we are seeing in the scriptures.
Yes, India is very pious. It's a very important place. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya states that anybody who is born in the land of Bharatabhasha has as his responsibility to become Krishna conscious and preach to other people, including Praneshara, who's also trying to say something. It's their, everyone's responsibility, especially if you're born in India. But if you've actually taken shelter and taken initiation of a bona fide guru in the cyclic succession, it's also your responsibility too. So, Bhartabhute, Poila Manasa Janma Jar. You know that verse? And anyone who's born in the land of Bhartabhumi, that does not include Fiji. Fiji.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the explanation.
So, Praneshra, you have a question? No.
Gurudev.
Yeah. What's the question?
India is a great place. In India, Bharat Bhumi Janam Hai Janam Sarthak Karo Karo Prabhupada, how it's the greatest possibility, it's grateful.
Yes, you have that responsibility. I mean, you're all, internet is also breaking up. So, everybody who's born in the land of Bharatabharsha has that responsibility to do that. Because India is not a place for material advancement. The West is a place for material advancement. And so that's why people go from India to the West. Just like I was talking to someone today, or the other day, and he was telling me that one of our nice devotees here, and he was telling me if you preach at IIT, IIT is Indian Institute of Technology, which Praneshra is a graduate of too. He said, most of the graduates, they'll end up in the United States. Except for Praneshra. He's actually loyal to his country. So it's everybody's responsibility if they're born in India and if they're Krishna conscious to help others. So,
Veda has a question.
Yes, you have a question.
Thank you, Gurudev. I was wondering, I was thinking about the mercy that Prabhupada gave us. If we continue with Krishna consciousness, we could go back to Godhead, even though after... I was just thinking, because it normally, without that mercy, it takes like years of like purification or in lifetimes of purification consciousness. What is like the quality of the people that go back to the spiritual world just after that, having that mercy? Do they have that pure consciousness to like?
Yeah, they're just as pure as anyone else is back there. It's not that you go back to the spiritual world and you're a second-class citizen. They put you in a neighborhood in the spiritual world where you can't associate with the real devotees. No. It's by Prabhupada's mercy one gets purified. And one of the methods of purification is, even if one isn't completely purified, one takes birth where Krishna's pastimes are. And that's the final like push or final purification that one gets. But Prabhupada, you know, this is the quick and easy path that Prabhupada has given us. I mean, it is really easy. I mean, I've been following Krishna consciousness, practicing, whatever, for 50 years, and it's been fun the whole time. I mean, sometimes there's a little trauma there too, but basically, it's been fun. Becoming Krishna consciousness is fun, you know. We travel around the world, we see people, we talk to people, we help people, we eat tons of prasadam. I mean, it pleases Prabhupada. So don't worry, be happy. You'll be just as pure as anyone else when you get back there. How's that sound?
If you don't
What's that?
If you don't realize like your identity before you die, yeah, then are you going to be going to Godhead?
Yes, because Krishna can have you be, Krishna is going to have you take birth wherever his pastimes are taking place in this material world. And then you'll realize your identity. If you serve, we have that faith, you know, what is that verse? Sridha Shabde Visha Shakahesu Dhrida Nisya. That one has that firm faith in Prabhupada and does it, everything will be taken care of. It's not, I mean, I don't worry about myself. I worry about others, but not about myself. Because Prabhupada's taking care of me. It's for sure. I got a sure bet. It's like going to the lottery and getting a sure bet and winning the lottery. Okay? All right. I think we're going to end because it's late. And actually, I want to rest a little extra. So, thank you all for joining us. It's been a pleasure. We'll see everybody tomorrow evening. Same time, same station. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaura Premananda.